this moment right now. Cause when you say
one FM WHSM Hayward, Muskie 101.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
How are new prescription drugs approved for use and priced in America? One top expert believes the current process may be putting patients at risk rather than safeguarding their health. We'll have the story.
The rethinking was about, how do we know if this really works as well as the company says it does? And why in the world is it so hard to afford?
Then, want to boost your well-being and lower your stress? It may be as simple as getting outdoors and enjoying nature.
When you have really stressful events, it's good to look for like low barrier leisure or outdoor activities, walking and gardening and just having good quality time outdoors to improve your mental health.
Those two stories and more are straight ahead on this week's InfoTrack. Don't go away. InfoTrack comes your way right after this.
This is the story of the one. As a safety manager at a manufacturing plant, he does everything he can to keep his coworkers safe. From finding ways to reduce risks to keeping safety supplies in stock. And for that, he relies on Grainger. Grainger offers a broad range of quality products and next-day delivery, so he can always play it safe. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes. So it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
New prescription drugs are being approved using an accelerated process. But is this putting patients at risk? Here to explore the hidden dangers of the drug approval process, InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. We're joined by Jerry Avorn, MD, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and the author of Rethinking Medications, Truth, Power, and the Drugs You Take. Doctor, when you say rethinking medications, I know you wrote an entire book on it, but what is the central thesis and how does that challenge conventional medical practices?
The hope was that it would give everybody who reads it a chance to say, well, how do we know whether a drug works and how do we know if it's safe and what should its price really be, and really taking all those issues from scratch and coming up with better answers perhaps than we have today.
You describe the current state of medication use as overprescribed and often harmful. Can you maybe give an example that highlights that?
Sure, but let me also hasten to add that we've got a lot of wonderful drugs. This is not a just say no to drugs kind of book. I think drugs are great. I've been prescribing them myself for decades. They are wonderful when they work well. My concern was just that we've gone a little bit astray in terms of FDA loosening its standards a lot for what a company can get approved and market. And we've totally lost control of what they ought to cost, and that Americans pay twice what people in other countries pay for the very same drugs made by the same company in the same factory. So the rethinking was about, how do we know if this really works as well as the company says it does? And why in the world is it so hard to afford?
Was there any turning point in your medical career that made you change your views?
Well, I guess I've been a skeptic about most things my whole life, but I think things began to have a turning point actually during the AIDS epidemic in the early 1990s, where FDA said, let's have looser standards so we can get promising drugs to patients who are dying of AIDS. And if we're not positive they work, well, we'll figure that out later. And that made a lot of sense at the time, given how horrible the AIDS epidemic was. But that created something called the accelerated approval pathway that Congress approved. And my concern is that that has really become a very highly abused loophole. And we now, many decades after the AIDS epidemic is behind us in terms of its worst days, we have the FDA still giving approval for drugs that don't really show that they help patients, but make a lab test better. And the idea that you'll then do follow-up studies to find out if they really work kind of gets forgotten about sometimes. And so we have a lot of drugs that FDA has approved based on this 1990s era, let's get it out there quick kind of approach. But the companies then fall short in doing the follow-up, and we have all these drugs on the market, sometimes costing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, that the companies have actually not demonstrated are effective in making patients better.
Tell us some of the most common medications that you think are prescribed maybe unnecessarily or without enough critical consideration.
Well, one category that really struck me the more I dug into it was drugs for muscular dystrophy. Now, this is a tragic condition. It afflicts mostly young boys, and it renders them wheelchair-bound and eventually, in the absence of any effective treatment, kills them in their 20s or 30s. So it's really a situation where you'd love to have anything that helps. The manufacturers of a number of drugs over the last number of years have gone to the FDA and say, give us some of that accelerated approval kind of process, and we promise we'll come back later and show that not only does it make a lab test better, but it actually helps patients. And the FDA said, sure, why not? We have nothing to offer these kids. It does make a lab test look a tiny bit better. You've got yourself a drug with full approval, essentially. You can charge hundreds of thousands of dollars for it. And please come back and do those follow-up studies to see if it's really helping these kids. And the companies, the worst offender being a biotech company here in the Boston area, never got around to starting the studies or submitting them. They may have started them and not finished them, but the point is, this neat idea of allowing a drug on the market because it makes a lab test better, even though it doesn't help patients, has become a vehicle for companies marketing drugs that actually have never been shown to help people and, in fact, are costing the country hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
We're talking with Dr. Jerry Avorn, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and the author of Rethinking Medications. Doctor, you critique the prescribing cascade in the book. What is that cascade and why is that so damaging?
Well, often a physician will or a nurse or another health professional will prescribe a drug. It may cause a side effect, and all drugs cause side effects. You know, most of our drugs are safe, but they do cause things like, you know, low blood pressure or confusion or itches or whatever, and that's to be expected. But the unsuspecting doctor may think that, oh, that's a different condition, I'll prescribe a different drug for it. And then we have one drug treating the side effect of the first drug, and then maybe it'll cause a side effect. And the people who really get whacked by this the worst are older patients, because there is such a tendency to say, oh, you're forgetful, or oh, you're sleepy, or oh, you're lightheaded. That must be because you're old, and not realize that maybe it's a drug side effect. And we really need to be vigilant about that.
Also, sometimes multiple doctors are prescribing things and they may not necessarily consider what the other doctor is prescribing.
That's exactly right. And in the book, I propose that patients bring in a brown bag of everything they're taking, not just that I might have prescribed, but that another doctor might have prescribed, or that they're taking as an over-the-counter drug or a supplement, and just take everything you put into your body for your health and dump it on your doctor's desk, you know, with his or her permission, and say, let's go over these and figure out what do I need to be taking, what might interact with something else. Because often we doctors don't know what other doctors are prescribing. Or I've had patients where I thought I stopped that drug a year and a half ago. You're still taking it? You know, the pharmacy keeps refilling it? Or this supplement that you bought without a prescription, actually that can interact with something I've prescribed for you. Let's talk about it. And it's really only when you put everything into a bag and dump it on the doctor's desk that we can really come to some understanding of what are you taking and what do you really need to take.
Only two countries on earth permit direct-to-consumer prescription drug advertising. What are your thoughts about drug ads in the U.S.?
I think they're counterproductive, and I think all those other countries that have kept them illegal, as we did in the U.S. until 1997, those other countries have got it right, and I think we've got it wrong. It doesn't do anybody any good, except maybe the drug company, for there to be something on the evening news about how here is how you ought to treat your metastatic breast cancer that is estrogen receptor negative. These are not kinds of things that patients are going to be in a position to make a decision based on a 60-second commercial. I think we ought to have a lot of conversation with patients and doctors together, but not to have these advertised as if they were shampoo or cars or laptops. You know, these are things which ought to be a reasonable conversation between the prescriber and the patient, not something that's on a TV commercial.
You mentioned bringing in a bag of prescriptions to your doctor and having him look through them. How can patients otherwise advocate for themselves? And are there some red flags that maybe a patient or caregiver can look for?
Yeah, I try to suggest a number of questions that a patient ought to bring to the doctor. And I point out that when I go to my doctor, I often kind of glaze over and don't remember everything I wanted to ask and don't remember everything the doctor told me. So it's fine to come with a pad of paper and a pencil and have your questions ready and ask the doctor for every med you're taking, you know, what is this for? How do we know when we're at the goal that we want to get at? Is there a less expensive alternative that'll work just as good? What are some side effects to watch out for? Those are the sort of questions that every decent doctor or other healthcare professional ought to be willing to answer before you ask someone to put a chemical in their body once or twice a day for the rest of their lives.
Dr. Jerry Avorn, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and the author of Rethinking Medications, Truth, Power, and the Drugs You Take. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
Next, feeling stressed out? There's an easy, natural solution. That story as InfoTrack continues.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead. With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you get coverage options based on how much you want to pay for car insurance. And then you decide how to spend the rest of your money because you're in charge. Today, you're going to pay down your credit card bill. But you decide when you'll pay it.
Before the due date, so those interest charges don't get you.
But you decide if you pay it in full.
But you definitely should, because, again, interest charges.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, we'll help you find coverage at a fair price. And then you're in charge. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our daughter, Jessie, loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective, too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
I love a day on the water with friends, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis sometimes holds me back. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy.
Teaching music is my passion, but my active psoriatic arthritis can limit me at times. Now I'm treating my joint symptoms with Skyrizi.
With Skyrizi, most people with plaque psoriasis saw 90% clearer skin at 4 months.
Or if you are an adult with active psoriatic arthritis, Skyrizi helps you move with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
There's nothing like clearer skin.
There's nothing like better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
A balanced look at today's most important issues. This is InfoTrack. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
A research study found an easy way to boost your well-being and lower your stress. It may be as easy as going outside for a walk or doing some gardening. With the details, InfoTrack reporter Jim Anthony. Jim?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us to talk about the study's findings is Colby Parkinson, who helped lead the research while finishing his studies at Oregon State. He's now a doctoral student at Penn State. Your study found a clear link between spending time outdoors and better mental health during COVID. What kinds of things were you measuring and what stood out to you?
We were looking specifically at two kind of measures of time spent outdoors during COVID-19. And so we were looking at the amount of time people were spending and if the amount of time that they spent increased. And so we found that people who spent more number of days outside, they had a higher personal well-being, mental well-being, whereas people who actually increased the amount of time that they spent outside compared to before COVID-19, they had lower perceptions of stress and lower depressive symptoms, kind of suggesting that they could be more like adaptive strategies during stressful events.
It's interesting that most people were not hiking mountains or hitting the trails. They were walking around the block or gardening, staying, you know, close to home. Why do you think those everyday outdoor activities made such a big difference?
You're right. The one that we found was most common was just walking and gardening and what we considered near home activities. And these were probably really low barrier and really safe activities to do during the pandemic. And so they probably became reliable and trustworthy outlets for people. And it's been found that when you have these really stressful events, it's good to look for like low barrier leisure or outdoor activities to improve your mental health. That's not to say that everyone needs to go out and do some really intense outdoor recreation activity, but it's actually that just having good quality time outdoors in a way that you feel comfortable and safe is probably best.
There were some disconcerting aspects to the study, highlighting significant disparities in outdoor leisure access and participation and engagement, especially among communities of color and those facing financial stress. How did those gaps show up in the data, and what do they tell us?
We kind of ran some differences between people based on demographics, and the biggest difference was comparing based on race. So generally, you know, white and Asian people, they were able to increase their outdoor recreation more than people who identified as Black or African American. Additionally, people of lower household income, they had a harder time finding more time to recreate outdoors. In terms of the effect on mental health, we actually control for that. So basically the effect that we observed is trying to account for those different rates and participation based on those different groups. But it does mean that if you were looking for ways to increase outdoor participation, it would make sense to focus on communities that might have either fewer resources or focus on more disenfranchised communities that could probably benefit not only from having more participation outdoors, but also benefit because there was broader research, other research that showed that generally these communities were harder hit by COVID-19, both including by death and then also including kind of those rollover effects such as, you know, negative mental health consequences and things of that nature.
You and your colleagues also described outdoor time as a kind of quote unquote behavioral medicine. That's a powerful idea. What does that mean in practice?
There's a really big growing movement to consider outdoor areas, green spaces as public health infrastructure. And so I think we definitely put our research in this case in that realm. And there's a lot of ways that you can look at that. Some people who are maybe more traditional psychologists do Nature RX, where they literally prescribe spending time outdoors to people who are having negative mental health outcomes or things of that nature. In our case, we're approaching it more from like a public health perspective. And so the idea is that if we can observe that increased engagement in the outdoors or frequent engagement in the outdoors is associated with these different health outcomes, then you can show that just like how there have been campaigns to promote physical activity in particular, you could start to think about campaigns that could promote engaging in outdoors as a mental health benefit. Again, particularly in the case of our study during really stressful events.
Even if it just means going outside just to get some fresh air, right? And kind of clear your mind.
Certainly, yeah. There's a lot of evidence, even really simple stuff during COVID and in other contexts. There's these ideas that if you just even have a window that has more green views, they've shown that that can improve your mental health. And we're just at the beginning of figuring out what are those processes that lead to that. But right now, we're just building an evidence base that's suggesting that this is a phenomenon that's occurring. And certainly, it doesn't need to be anything that's a high barrier or difficult to do. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that some of those just really safe, basic outdoor activities are great for people. And even just having basic access, there's ideas of like the 330-300 rule that you should always be able to see vegetation, you should always be able to be near vegetation, you should always be able to access public green space.
And that's key for the benefit of our mental health.
Exactly. And that's kind of a shorthand approach to how you can begin to manage at least urban environments. It's going to be a little bit different in more sparsely populated places. It's kind of a strategic approach to measuring, like, is my community or where I'm living, does it have adequate access to green space? And therefore, would it be, you know, a place that would be promoting health for myself?
One thing I found hopeful in your findings was that people who adapted during the pandemic, maybe by walking at different times or finding new places to go, were able to stay active. What can cities or communities do to support that kind of flexibility?
We did another study with the same sample, looking at these, what we called adaptive mechanisms. So these different approaches that people might take during COVID-19. And we were seeing how did they affect people's engagement rate, kind of under the idea that if we're also showing that engagement rate is going to have positive effects on mental health, then it'd be good to understand what was allowing people during this really stressful time and during a time when there were maybe different regulations and different health and safety concerns to get outdoors still. And what we observed was that individual adaptation strategies, so people just simply changing the times to be more convenient, or people going places that might be closer to home, they had increased outdoor recreation engagement. You also need to focus on the individual. And so you could do not only structural campaigns or structural efforts to increase access, but also try to think about what are ways that you can do public health campaigns that get at people's sense of self and sense of values. So how can you start encouraging people to have individual strategies that allow them to engage in the outdoors? And so that could be during COVID-19, for example, encouraging or providing information on when are the safest times to go to an outdoor space because it's lower visitation, or when are the most convenient times to go for people, kind of analyzing that and then making your space definitely open at that time, or trying to increase access to resource management that way. So focusing not just on can people have a public or easy to access green space, but can they also be able to navigate their personal challenges to successfully get there? And so I think it's focusing on both and promoting that people should take time and think about the strategies that are effective for them to get outdoors.
It's a fascinating study. Colby Parkinson, thanks for sharing your expertise.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Jim.
And I'm Jim Anthony for InfoTrack.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
This is the story of the one. As a lineman, he does whatever it takes to keep the power on in his community. And he wants a partner like Grainger who does the same. Grainger offers the professional-grade products he needs, from voltage detectors to harnesses to hard hats, plus fast, dependable delivery, so he can rise to every challenge. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
Are you ready to rethink your relationship with alcohol? We have essential advice to better protect yourself and your loved ones from alcohol-related cancer risks. Here with the story, InfoTrack reporter Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Sanjay Chatte, a PhD deputy division head of cancer prevention and population sciences at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Chatte, your study indicates that only about 40% of Americans actually realize that alcohol is a cancer risk. Do we have any idea as to why so few people know this?
I think whenever we have parties, alcohol flows freely. It's considered part of the celebration. It's a part of our culture. And also historically, tobacco and cancer risk has been advertised, has been promoted nationally. On the other hand, alcohol is more talked in the context of drunk driving or liver damage, but it's rarely talked about as a national public policy as a cause for cancer.
And your study indicates that 39% of Americans are not aware of the connection between cancer and alcohol, and another 20% are not sure if they've ever heard about this link. So what does alcohol do to our bodies to make us more susceptible to developing cancer?
Alcohol actually causes cancer in multiple ways. One, it can damage DNA, proteins, and cells, so it can damage all of that. Also, it can increase the inflammation, and also alcohol can alter hormonal levels. So these are the few of the mechanistic way alcohol can cause cancer.
And there are multiple types of cancer linked to alcohol use, aren't there?
Yes. There are 7 types of cancers that are linked with alcohol use. And they are breast cancer among men, colorectal cancer, liver cancer, and cancers in the mouth, voice box, throat, and the esophagus. So these are the 7 types of cancers that are shown to be associated with alcohol use.
How much more likely are people who drink alcohol to develop cancer? Is there a percentage figure?
It also depends on the amount. Some of the studies have shown that even low-level alcohol consumption can cause certain types of cancers. So the exact specific, you know, binge drinking versus drinking regularly, that kind of data is not available. Also, it's a combination of underlying genetic makeup of a person. As we all know that different people age differently. And so based on their background, other exposures, their genetics, all of that can modify the effect of alcohol on cancer.
And one of the most striking of your findings is that 30% of those in the study believe that cancer prevention is not possible. What would you say to people who believe that?
That is obviously not correct, because there was a recent paper showing that 2/3 of cancers can be prevented in this country. And that's simply by take away entire tobacco use, reduce the obesity, reduce the alcohol use, and some other preventive measures such as vaccination, we could eliminate almost 2/3 of cancer. So it's unfortunate that almost 1/3 of the population thinks that cancer prevention is not possible. And that also calls for like in a more sustained effort that we need to do at the national level to increase people's awareness that a majority of cancers are preventable.
And alcohol consumption keeps rising, as you're pointing out, with retailers introducing so-called ready-to-drink hybrid beverages that contain attractive flavors. As a proponent of good health yourself, it's hard for healthcare providers to compete with these increasingly attractive drink offerings, isn't it?
Yes, that is true. And that's one of the things that is also seen in the tobacco side, you know, more flavored cigarettes. That way they can get the more people hooked on to this habit.
And doctor, finally, if there are safe limits of alcohol intake for men and women, what would those limits be?
I think the more and more data is showing that there is no safe amount of alcohol that you can drink. Used to be like, you know, the men can drink like certain number of beverages per day. It was one for female. However, more and more data and also the more clear guidance is coming that even the low level of alcohol can cause certain cancers. So the best strategy is not to have any alcohol drink.
Dr. Sanjay Chatte with the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, thank you so much for sharing your information about alcohol and the cancer link.
Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
And that wraps up this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitty. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll be here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Marching into the night, they disappear to the left and right again. Another supper from a sack, a 99-cent heart attack. I got a pounding head and an aching back, and the camel's buried in a big straw stack. I'm gonna live where the green grass flows, watching my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. And plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Where the green grass grows. Well, I'm from a map dot, a stop sign on a blacktop. Caught the first bus I could hop from there. But all of this glitter is getting dark. There's concrete growing in the city park. I don't know who my neighbors are. And there's bars on the corners and bars on my heart. But I'm gonna live where the green grass grows. Watch my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. Plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Where the green grass grows. I'm gonna live where the green grass grows. Watch my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. And plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Whoa, where the green grass grows.
Smile, the charm, the words, the spark, everything you had it. Guess I had a naive heart, 'cause boy, I let you have it. You said I was your only, never thought you'd leave. Always gonna chasing stars. And you're always gonna fly away just because you know you can. Never gonna learn, there's no such place as a Neverland. You don't understand, you'll never grow up.
Raced off Route Three, out past where the blacktop ends. We'd walk to church on Sunday morning, race barefoot back to Johnson's Fence. That's where I first saw Mary, on that roadside picking blackberries. That summer I turned a corner in my soul down that red dirt road. It's where my first beer, it's where I found Jesus, where I wrecked my first car, I tore it all to pieces. I learned the path to heaven is full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers. I've come to know there's life at home. That red dirt road. Her daddy didn't like me much. Did my shackled up GTO. I'd sneak out in the middle of the night, throw rocks at her bedroom window. We'd turn out the headlights, drive by the moon. Talk about what the future might hold down that red dirt road. It's where I drank my first beer. It's where I found Jesus. Where I wrecked my first car. I tore it all to pieces. I learned the path to heaven is full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on achievers. I've come to know there's life at both ends of that red dirt road. I went out into the world and I came. I got her back again. And driving home tonight feels like I found a long lost friend. It's where I drank my first beer. It's where I found Jesus. Where I wrecked my first car. I tore it all to pieces. I learned the path to heaven. Sinners and believers. Learn that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers. I've come to know there's life at both ends of that red dirt road.
Best country.
101.1.
Muskie 101.
I was
a 10-year train wreck with the last call long neck. I was searching, I've been hurt real bad, moving on, getting sidetracked, one step forward and five back.
Muskie 101.
I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why. Don't know why. I have to drive so fast. My car has nothing to prove. It's not new, but it'll do 0 to 60 in 5.2. Someone in second place. I'm in a hurry to get things done. I rush and rush until that's no fun. All I really gotta do is
You're on the couch, blowing up my phone. You don't wanna come out, but you don't wanna be alone. It don't take but two to have a little soiree. If you're in the mood, sit tight right where you are, babe, cause I'll be at your door in 10 minutes. Whatever you got on, girl, stay in it. You ain't gotta leave the house to have a good time. I'm gonna bring the good time home to you. We'll have a whatever you got on, baby, stay in it. You ain't gotta leave the house to have a good time. I'm gonna bring the good time home to you. We'll have a house party. We don't need nobody. Turn your TV off. Break that boombox out. We'll wake up all the neighbors till the whole block hates us. And the cops show up and try to shut us down. If you're gonna be a homebody, we're gonna have a house party. If you wanna be a homebody, we're gonna have a house party.
The most country music.
Totally awesome. Played great country.
101.1
Muskie 101.
She's a yellow pair of running shoes, a holy pair of jeans. She looks great in cheap sunglasses. She looks great in anything. She's, I want a piece of chocolate. Take me to a movie. She's, I can't find a thing to wear. Now and then she's moody. She's a Saturn with a sunroof, with her brown hair blowing. She's a soft place to land and a good feeling knowing. She's a warm conversation that I wouldn't miss for nothing. She's a fighter when she's mad, and she's a lover when she's loving. And she's everything I ever wanted, and everything I need. I talk about her, I go on and on and on, 'cause she's everything. Saturday out on the town, and a church girl on Sunday. She's a cross around her neck and a cuss word 'cause it's Monday. She's a bubble bath and candles, baby, come and kiss me. She's a one glass of wine and she's feeling kind of tipsy. She's the giver I wish I could be, and the stealer of the covers. She's a picture in my wallet, my unborn children's mother. She's the hand that I'm holding when
I'm on my knees and praying. She's the answer to my prayer, and she's the song that I'm playing, and she's everything I ever wanted and everything I need. I talk about her, I go on and on and on, 'cause she's everything to me. She's the voice I love to hear, and someday when I'm 90, she's that wooden rocking chair I want rocking right beside me. Every day that passes, I only love her more. Yeah, she's the one that I'd lay down my own life for. And she's everything I ever wanted, everything I need. She's everything to me. Yeah, she's everything.
FM, Muskie 101.
If I could buy a house on Memory Lane, I'd put my money down and I'd sign my name on that little corner lot where it don't ever rain. We'd stay good as new, like a fresh coat of paint. You'd be mine in the shine of the front porch light. Yeah, I might as well live there, baby. That's where I spend most of my time, thinking about those sunsets that bled into jean jacket nights, those tangled up mornings lost in paradise. Still drunk on the feeling when I close my eyes. You're pulling me closer, your head on my shoulder.
you're burning me alive. I can't deny you, even when I catch you, even a weak alibi. 'Cause when the night falls, you make me forget your love is killing me, and it ain't over yet. How did you get to me? No one else on earth could ever hurt me, break my heart the way you do. No one else on earth was ever worth it. No one could love me like, no one could love me like you.
One FM WHSM Hayward, Muskie 101.
Well, I caught my wife with another man, and it cost me 99. On a prison farm in Georgia, close to the floor.